Welcome back to the deep dive. I want to start today by asking you to do something very simple. I want you to take a deep breath in, hold it for just a second, and now let it out. Now, statistically speaking, you're going to do that about 20,000 times today.
Hopefully without thinking about it too much.
Exactly. It is the most automatic thing we do until it isn't. Today, we are looking at the moment when that simple automatic act becomes, well, a giant question mark.
Yeah.
We are diving deep into the world of modern spirometry standards in asthma and COPD management.
And I know what you're thinking, spirometry. Isn't that just blowing into a plastic tube?
That is exactly what I thought. I pictured that little device with the floating blue ball they give you after surgery.
To prevent pneumonia.
But the sources we have today paint a completely different picture. This isn't just about blowing air. This is a story about the bridge between what you feel, which, spoiler alert, is often wrong, and objective reality.
That is the perfect way to frame it. We are witnessing a massive shift in respiratory medicine. We're moving from an era of, you know, blowing into a tube and hoping for the best,
right,
to a sophisticated ecosystem of sensors, real-time data analysis, and what we call longitudinal tracking.
The sources for this dive are just, they're fascinating because they highlight a pretty glaring problem in how we've historically handled lung health.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, diagnosing lung conditions based on symptoms alone is surprisingly risky. It turns out we are terrible narrators of our own lung function.
It's incredibly risky. Symptoms are trippy little things. They can be transient, coming and going with weather. They can be misleading or, and this is the scary part, they can be entirely absent, even when serious damage is happening inside the lungs.
So our mission today is to uncover how modern spirometry systems are different from the legacy devices of the past.
A huge difference.
We're going to look at how they are changing the timeline for diagnosing things like asthma and COPD, and why data quality is suddenly the new frontier in patient care.
It's not just about the machine, it's about the philosophy of care.
It is. So to keep us on track, we're going to look at this through three specific lenses. First, precision and accuracy, essentially. Why we can't trust our feelings and need a machine to tell the truth.
Good.
Second, the crystal ball, how technology is enabling early detection. And finally, the long game tracking trends over time to see the movie, not just the snapshot.
I like that structure. It really highlights the evolution of the field.
Okay, let's unpack this first section then, the shift from subjective to objective. You said relying on symptoms is a trap. Why is that such a big deal? If I'm wheezing, I'm wheezing right. Why do I need a computer for that?
Sure, you're wheezing. But why are you wheezing? That's the question. Relying on patient-reported symptoms typically leads to two massive failures in medicine. First, you have overdiagnosis.
Okay, walk me through that. How do you overdiagnose a breathing problem?
Picture a patient walking into a clinic. They're wheezing, they feel tight in the chest, maybe they have a bad cold, or it's peak allergy season, or they just ran to catch the bus in cold air.
Okay.
If you rely just on that snapshot of symptoms and how the patient describes their distress, you might diagnose them with a chronic condition they don't actually have.
So they get treated for a lifelong disease just because they had a bad week.
Exactly. And that means medication. We're talking about things like inhaled corticosteroids. These are serious drugs.
For sure.
They're fantastic if you need them. But if you diagnose based on a bad week, you might be committing that patient to years of medication exposure they just don't need. That's cost, potential side effects, unnecessary anxiety.
That's a huge burden. But then you have the inverse, right? Which sounds even more dangerous.
Underdiagnosis.
Right.
This is where the patient sits in the doctor's office and says, "I feel fine." They aren't coughing right now. Their chest feels clear today.
Right.
Maybe they've subconsciously started taking the elevator instead of the stairs so they don't feel winded. So the clinician assumes everything is normal.
So they miss the disease because the patient had a good day or has adjusted their life to hide the symptoms.
Precisely. The subjective feeling of breathing is notoriously inaccurate. We are very bad at judging our own lung function until it gets really, really bad.
So the modern solution is to stop asking how do you feel and start asking the lungs what are you actually doing.
Exactly.
And that's where the machine comes in. It's like a lie detector test for the lungs.
Right. Modern spirometry isn't guessing. It measures dynamic airflow and lung volume parameters directly.
Oh.
But there's one key metric here we really need to focus on to understand the diagnosis gap. Reversibility.
Reversibility. I saw this in the notes and it seemed critical. Break that down for us.
This is essentially the fork in the road between asthma and COPD. On the surface, they can look very similar, wheezing, shortness of breath.
Right.
But physiologically, they act differently.
So how does the test tell them apart?
We do a baseline test, The patient blows into the machine. Then we give the patient a bronchodilator, a medication to open the airways.
Okay.
We wait a bit, and then we test again. Modern systems are incredibly precise at calculating if that airflow limitation is reversible.
So if the airways open up, it's likely asthma.
Exactly. If the numbers jump up significantly, if the airways respond to the medication and open up, that points to asthma. But if the limitation is fixed, if the medication doesn't really change the airflow, that points towards COPD.
And this isn't just an academic distinction. I mean, this changes the entire treatment plan.
It's night and day. If you get this wrong, you might put a COPD patient on asthma meds that won't help them, or vice versa. You're treating a symptom, not the specific physiology.
That brings it right back to that objective reality concept. The machine sees what the doctor can't hear with a stethoscope.
Exactly. It cuts through the noise of how I feel today and gives you the hard data.
But, and this is a big bite, but that data is only as good as the test itself.
Garbage in, garbage out. That is the golden rule of data.
Right. This brings us to our second lens, the tech upgrade and quality control. I have to tell you, I did a breathing test years ago for a physical, and I remember the experience feeling chaotic.
Let me guess. Someone was yelling at you.
Yes. The nurse was just shouting, blow, blow, keep going, harder. It felt like the results depended entirely on how much she yelled at me.
Yeah.
I felt like if I had a quieter nurse, I would have been diagnosed with a different disease.
That is the legacy problem in a nutshell, and it's a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Older systems were heavily technician dependent.
Mm.
Spirometry is unique because it's effort dependent. It's not like a blood pressure cuff where you just sit there. You have to perform. It's an athletic event for your lungs.
So in the old days, if the operator was tired or inexperienced or just having a bad day,
the data suffered. You could have healthy lungs but get a bad result because of a bad test. Or you could even cheat the test by stopping too early.
So how does the modern tech fix that human factor? We still have to blow into the machine, right?
We do. But the difference is real-time quality control.
Okay, what does that look like in practice? Is the machine yelling at me now?
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
But much more politely and accurately. Imagine the machine is essentially grading the test while you were taking it.
Yeah.
It's analyzing the flow curve in milliseconds.
Yeah.
It actively alerts the clinician to leaks, like if your lips aren't tight around the mouthpiece. It detects poor effort. It spots inconsistent timing instantly.
So it doesn't wait for the doctor to look at the chart 3 days later and go, this looks weird.
Exactly. It says, hey, stop. That wasn't a valid maneuver. Let's do it again. It catches errors in the moment.
It's like having a spell checker for your breathing or a gym trainer correcting your form mid-squat.
That's a great analogy. It ensures the maneuver is technically correct before it even records the data. And it also standardizes the coaching. The prompts are automated.
So whether I'm tested by a veteran respiratory therapist or a new nurse, the standard is the same.
Right. But the real game changer here, and this is a bit technical but super important, is reproducibility thresholds.
That does sound technical. Translate that for us.
Okay, so humans are variable. If you blow three times, you'll get three slightly different numbers. That's normal. But if those numbers are wildly different, that's not your lungs changing. That's a testing error. That is what we call noise.
So the machine is smart enough to filter that noise out.
Precisely. Modern systems have strict algorithms that prevent the machine from interpreting that noise as a medical fact. It distinguishes true physiology from what we call testing artifact.
Testing artifact sounds like something from an old sci-fi movie. I assume here it just means like coughing.
Coughing, your throat closing up, the tongue blocking the mouthpiece. The machine sees the shape of the wave and says, nope, that's a tongue, not a lung problem.
I love that. The machine is acting as a gatekeeper. It makes sure the doctor never even sees the bad data to begin with.
It protects the clinical interpretation. It ensures that when a doctor looks at a chart to make a life-altering diagnosis, they are looking at your lungs, not a mistake.
So we've got accurate data. We've removed the human error. Now let's talk about what we can do with that data. This is the part I'm excited about. The crystal ball. Early detection, specifically for COPD.
This is where the technology gets really impressive, and frankly, where it saves lives. We often talk about COPD as a silent disease.
Why silent? Is it because the symptoms start so slowly?
That, and because our lungs have a huge amount of reserve. We have way more lung capacity than we need for sitting on the couch or walking to the car.
Mm.
So by the time a patient actually feels short of breath, by the time they say, hey doc, I'm winded, they've often already lost a significant amount of lung function.
Wow. So the body is just really good at compensating.
Too good. We just slow down a little bit. We take the elevator instead of the stairs. We subconsciously adjust our life to fit our shrinking lungs, and we don't notice the change until it's drastic.
So we're flying blind until we crash.
Historically, yes, but modern sensors can capture what we call low-flow abnormalities and changes in the small airways long before the patient feels severe symptoms. We call this preclinical obstruction.
Preclinical obstruction. That sounds like a paradox. You have an obstruction, but it's preclinical?
It means repeatable measurements are showing declining ratios, specifically in the smaller airways. Think of them as the tiny residential streets before you get to the highway. The traffic jam starts there.
And the machine picks up that neighborhood traffic jam, even though the highway is still moving.
Perfectly put. The numbers are waving a red flag before the symptoms do.
And why does catching it at the silent phase matter so much? I mean, if the patient feels fine, why worry them?
Because lung tissue doesn't grow back. Once it's gone, it's gone. COPD is progressive. If we catch it early, we can reinforce smoking cessation immediately. We can start risk stratification. It shifts the entire management strategy from reactive to preventative.
It's the difference between changing your oil and replacing your engine?
Precisely. Early identification reduces the diagnostic delay that accelerates functional decline. We want to intervene when we can still save lung function, not when we're just managing a disability.
This connects directly to our next lens, which I think is the most crucial for anyone actually living with these conditions. We're moving from a snapshot to a movie.
Yes, longitudinal trending. This is the holy grail of chronic disease management.
In the old days, you'd go in, take a test, and that number was your reality for that day. It was a snapshot.
Right. And snapshots lack context. Imagine taking a photo of someone running. Are they at the start of the race or the end? Are they speeding up or slowing down? You can't tell from one picture.
Right.
Legacy systems gave static outputs. Modern systems treat spirometry as a disease management tool over time.
It's like looking at a single frame of a movie and trying to guess the whole plot. You need the whole scene.
And here's why that matters. Variability versus progression. Everyone has good lung days and bad lung days.
Sure. Maybe it's humid. Maybe there's pollen. Maybe you just ran up the stairs.
Exactly. That is short-term variability. It's just noise. But progression is a gradual, consistent decline due to the disease itself.
And telling the difference between the two is hard.
Without trend data, it's nearly impossible. If I see you today and your numbers are lower than last year, is it because you have a cold or is your COPD getting worse? With only two data points, I'm guessing.
Right.
Modern trending overlays multiple data points to differentiate that short-term noise from the actual downward slope of the disease.
So what does this mean for clinical decision-making? How does that change things?
It changes everything. If we see a stable trend line, even if you're having a bad day, we might be able to hold steady or even de-escalate treatment. You can say, you're actually doing great. Let's lower your medication dose.
And that's a huge win for the patient. Nobody wants to take more medicine than they have to.
Exactly. And on the flip side, if we see a downward trend, even a subtle one the patient hasn't noticed yet, we can intervene before a crisis occurs, before an exacerbation sends you to the ER.
It sounds like it gives the doctor permission to be proactive instead of just reacting to emergencies.
It strengthens shared decision-making. You aren't just telling the patient what to do. You are showing them the movie of their own health. You can turn the screen around and say, look at this line. This is where we are heading. Let's change course.
That visual must be incredibly powerful for a patient.
It is. It makes the disease tangible.
Now, I want to touch on something the source material highlighted regarding fairness and standards. We hear about bias in data, and it seems spirometry isn't immune to that history. How do modern machines address this?
It comes down to standardized reference values. To know if your lungs are healthy, I have to compare you to a predicted value.
The norms.
Right. What should a person of your age, height, and sex be able to breathe like? But historically, the data sets used to build those norms were often limited or outdated.
So you might tell someone they are abnormal just because they don't fit into a data set from 40 years ago.
Exactly. Modern systems use updated reference frameworks. Specifically, the GLI, the Global Lung Function Initiative standards. These are massive, multi-ethnic global data sets.
So it's about better math, basically.
It is. It minimizes demographic bias by ensuring that the ruler we are using to measure health is accurate for the person standing in front of us. It makes a diagnosis fair, regardless of the patient's background.
And looking at the side-by-side comparison in the notes, the difference is just, it's stark. Legacy was manual validation, limited trends, standalone devices.
Mm-hmm.
Modern is automated checks, built-in tracking, integrated reporting.
And that integrated reporting part, I know it sounds boring, workflow efficiency, but that actually matters for the patient experience, doesn't it?
It has to, because nobody wants to wait 3 days for results.
Or have their file lost between the lab and the specialist.
Yeah.
Seamless data handling reduces transcription errors, which are a huge source of medical mistakes, and speeds up report availability. It supports same-visit decision-making.
That's the dream, right? You take the test, the machine grades it, the doctor sees the trend, and you adjust the plan. All in one visit.
That is efficiency that actually improves care, not just speed for speed's sake.
Now, there is a practical question here. This all sounds great. High-tech sensors, AI grading, global standards. But how do we scale this? How do we make sure the test I get in a high-tech university hospital is the same quality as one at a small rural clinic?
Scalability is the final piece of the puzzle. It's no good if this tech only exists in an ivory tower. Modern systems are designed to support high-volume use without losing that quality control we talked about.
And consistency is key here too, right? Because patients move.
Absolutely. A patient might be hospitalized for a flare-up, get tested there, and then follow up with their family doctor 2 weeks later. You want the test from the inpatient bed to match the results in the outpatient clinic.
Otherwise, you can't build that movie trend line we talked about.
Exactly. If the cameras are different, the movie looks jumpy. Consistency across transitions of care is vital.
The source material specifically mentions BowMind in this context. How do they fit into this ecosystem?
Well, you need someone to actually provide the infrastructure. BowMind plays a specific role here. They aren't just providing hardware. The source notes that they provide the systems that align with these modern accuracy and workflow expectations.
So they are facilitating the access to these platforms.
Exactly. They facilitate access to platforms that prioritize reproducibility and longitudinal insight. It's about ensuring that the tools available to clinicians actually match the clinical needs we've been discussing.
It's the infrastructure of accuracy.
You could say that. It's ensuring that whether you are in a large respiratory program or a smaller practice, the standard of care remains high. You need reliable partners for this kind of tech.
So let's wrap this up. We've covered a lot of ground today. We went from guessing based on wheezing and subjective feelings to using high-tech sensors that track trends over years, self-correct for human error, and even account for global biological diversity.
It really is a paradigm shift. We are moving from episodic care, you know, treating symptoms when they flare up and scare us, to precision medicine, treating the underlying physiology based on hard, objective data.
And that transition from I feel okay to the data shows I'm stable is massive.
It is. It validates the treatment. It empowers the patient to understand their own body. And ultimately, it saves lung function. And saving lung function means saving quality of life.
Here is a thought I want to leave you with, and it's a bit provocative. If this technology effectively gives us a crystal ball, if it can see lung function decline before we feel it, does that change our responsibility regarding testing?
That is a great question.
Should we be waiting until we cough to take a spirometry test? Or, given what we know now about the silent phase, should we be treating lung function testing more like a blood pressure check, something we do proactively long before we feel sick?
Based on the data, the earlier the better. The body hides damage well until it can't. Knowing your baseline before you get sick might be the most valuable health data you could have.
Something to mull over. Maybe it's time to check the engine before the check engine light comes on. Thank you for listening to this deep dive into modern spirometry. Hopefully you'll never look at blowing into a tube the same way again.
Thanks for having me.
See you next time.